You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Columbus, Ohio, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me in my well-appointed hotel room is David Goss, of course, in the Octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. And if you're listening, you're listening to a very special show. That's because this is the MLS Cup wrap show. Guys, another year of MLS in the books, and the champion, MLS Cup champion, the Portland Timbers. It took them 5 years in MLS. They beat the Seattle Sounders, the Vancouver Whitecaps, to the honor. I'm sure they're pumped about that. We'll talk about all that in a second. We'll break down the whole game. It's good to be with you guys again. Every time I'm off a show, I miss it. And then I come back as well, Andrew.
Thank you. We brought in the bear. We had a little bit of research bear while you were gone. Oh. Now Andrew's back. It's comfortable to be in the passenger seat alongside you.
Well, it was not so comfortable to be in the passenger seat if you were a Columbus Crew SC fan last night. Matt, you had a different perspective than us. Quick thought on the game, then we'll really break it down. MLS Cup, the 20th, the 10th team to win it. What's it mean?
I think for Portland, it is validation of their process, which they have taken a lot of flack for over the years. I think a lot of it deserved. I mean, and this is a team that 2 months ago at this time was below the red line. They were outside of the playoff picture with, I think, 4 weeks left in the season. So it's kind of insane that here we are, 2 months later, and they're hoisting the cup. And it just goes to show if you get one or two little moves right in this league, you could gas your team up by 15-20%. And you could go from a team outside the playoffs to a team that's winning titles. It's pretty amazing.
And they win a title based on a little bit of a blitzkrieg at the beginning of the game, a goal just 27 seconds in. That's a record for MLS Cup. The previous record was 5 minutes, which I thought was kind of crazy. It kind of shows you the caginess of finals. But the Portland Timbers came out and punched them right in the face. Steve Clark with, I think you have to call it, an absolute howler in this. We'll break that one down in just a second. Rodney Wallace gets a goal in the 7th minute. A lot of controversy with that one. It appeared the ball was out of play in the buildup. Tony Chani stops playing a little bit, and all of a sudden, Darlington Nagbe is rolling. He's off to the races, and then Rodney Wallace heads the ball in. Now, Kai Kamara did get one back. There was a lot of talk before this game about whether or not he would play. He had a little bit of a knock the day before the game. He started. He played 90 minutes.
He had a little bit of a knock. Yeah,
Said after the game he had a bruise.
Yeah.
So,
there's a belief that there was a bit of mind games maybe being played.
Yeah, and I think Greg Berhalter said, hey, you guys blew that one up, us being the media. I think MLSsoccer.com in on that as well. But it's a huge storyline, and there was no real information. So, it is what it is. Ahead of a final, you're wondering about the best player on the team, or at least the most productive player. He gets a goal in the 18th minute, and then no goals the rest of the way. Really not a ton of chances for Crew SC. Really, the Portland Timbers hit two posts. They had some opportunities, a great save by Steve Clark. But I think in the end, a deserved champion of MLS Cup, the team that played the best on the night, the team that got the most breaks, and also I think played the best during the playoffs. They found their stride at the right time, as Matt said. Dave, what do you take away? You were in the stands. I was in the press box. Matt was watching from home. Your perspective on the match?
Well, first of all, the one thing everyone said after the game around the hotel, the reporters, everyone, the first sentence everyone said was the better team won. I think everyone agreed with that. Portland was very good on the day. They were smart. They were impressive. The atmosphere was unbelievable. I was with the Crew fans at their bar before the game, the 4th Street bar. They were excited. They were into it. They were talking soccer with me. It was great. Then I went to the Timber Army tailgate for a little while, and just everyone's story of, I just drove 10 hours to get here.
Yeah.
Or I just like left work and came,
yeah. Saturday night, I was like, oh, man, I'm just going to book it.
Right.
You're a man of the people, man. You're both sides. You're playing sides of the fence.
Well, it really was going into this game. I didn't care who won because I thought both teams had played fun this season, were enjoyable to watch. They both had young American coaches that were exciting, a little bit more youth development so far in the Crew side, which I'm more intrigued by. But, yeah, it was a great atmosphere. It really was. The Timbers Army, the entire Crew, that building, when it gets filled, we've been here for USA Mexico as well, it it hops. It's maybe at times a glorified high school football stadium.
Yeah.
It's simple, but who cares? You have a field and you have fans, and it really works.
He had the best pitch in MLS as well. It was awarded that this week. It's got a really nice surface. But I really think the key to this in-game environment, and believe me, folks, we will get to the breakdown of the game in a second, but I want to give you a feel of the event. It's the traveling fan aspect that made it really, really special. The Timbers Army came in and took this city over in a way. They were here with their log, which I think was silly all around, and I'm glad it didn't get into the stadium because that would have been just insane.
Yeah.
It's home field advantage. You're negating that. But having them on one side and having the Nordic on the other side and having that dueling kind of,
right,
you know, back and forth was awesome. And I think you kind of hit it on the head. It wasn't contentious. There wasn't any, like, there wasn't any anger between the two sides. Every interaction,
right,
I saw was, you know, people with high-fiving each other, like, hey, glad you made it out here. This is awesome.
Right.
Like, it was a real sense of community, but of course, once the game started, that all goes out the window. Matt, on the broadcast, anything stick out to you?
It didn't really seem like a completely wild atmosphere, and I think that's because of what happened, you know, within the first 10 minutes. And probably the mic placement, but it sounded like a stadium filled with uneasy people for the last 80 minutes of the broadcast, which is what it mostly was. There were obviously the mostly crew fans there, and every missed touch was greeted with kind of a groan. So it was a really interestingly intense and sort of pensive mood that was conveyed over the air, which is what you expect from a home crowd in a situation like that when your team comes out of the gate and, like, forgets that they're playing soccer.
Completely asleep. I will say that the Nordic 2 hours before the game was there in force singing. I mean, the amount of, like, you know, the march into the stadium, there were all these different kind of marches that I witnessed, you know, Spanish-speaking fans with a drum line, like, all these different people. And then, it just kind of, the air was sucked out a little bit.
That, I mean, like he said, 7 minutes in, you're down 2-0, and they're on two goals where you can't believe what you're seeing. And I think everyone in the crowd that was that way, but it was unfortunate that the Nordic couldn't get the noise level up and drive the team. And that was something that people said around me, and I get it. If I'm a fan, I would be, you know, shell-shocked as well. There was other sections that were actually starting chants around me that were then, you know, being picked up around the stadium, but Doyle's right. It was uneasy. It was tense.
Mm-hmm.
When you walked in, it was electric. And then 27 seconds in, that just kills you.
Yeah, let's talk about why it was tense. Yeah, 27 seconds. As I said, it's a record. And Diego Valeri, I think, gets all the credit in the world on this one. Just to give you a little bit of background, if you didn't see the play, I'd be shocked if you didn't see it. But look, they're passing it around the back, the crew are, and this is what they're known for. They want to possess the ball, and they came out lackadaisical. They came out little bit too relaxed, okay, a lot of bit too relaxed,
yeah.
And you know, a little bit of combination play between Parkhurst and Trapp, and the ball gets played back to Steve Clark, and I mean, I'm baffled as to why he would take a touch
right
across his own 6-yard box, and then, I mean, I'm telling you, I counted the steps. There's about 8 steps between the touch and the attempted clearance. He's chopping his feet. He doesn't get his head up. Diego Valeri is bearing down on him like a bat out of hell. And an incredible play, just an incredible play by Diego Valeri to slide in there at the perfect time and redirect the ball on the goal. And you see Steve Clark immediately know that, wow, this is a huge, huge mistake in the biggest game of his
life. I think a ton of credit has to go to Caleb Porter. I think that there was an obvious sense of let's jump on them early. The first touch of the game, Portland plays a ball down the line, and Gaston Saro jogs over and sees it out, and Adi is running as hard as he can. And you could see Columbus had this thought of, yeah, we'll just knock it around. Let's both feel out the game and get into it. And Portland 100% said, let's jump on them in the first minute or two, and let's go after them. And I thought that was genius. The other thing I thought was genius was Diego Valeri's up there, and he was playing as a second forward defensively alongside Adi in the final third, pretty much. Once Columbus got around midfield, he would drop in and become another midfielder and help pack that space. But I don't think that Columbus's backline or Trapp or Clark even thought that Valeri would be chasing up there that early in the game. And I think that's why Clark did it. He's got time. He's got space. He turns to hit it. And I thought it was brilliant from Portland to just jump on that and to force the issue, and it changed the game.
Columbus has to recognize that, though. And it's not just Greg Berhalter who got beat in that first minute, and it was. Berhalter didn't have his team ready to play, but the players have to be smart enough to recognize that. Will Trapp cannot hit that pass back at that weight to Steve Clark. Because Portland's setup, if you look at that play, they were designed to take away every easy outlet. There was nothing easy for Clark right there. And that says that A, Portland knew exactly what Columbus was going to do, and B, Columbus wasn't prepared to deal with that. And so, I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around, but Steve Clark, to his credit at the end, said, this is all on me. This is my fault. And you know what? He is 100% correct.
Yeah,
but he has to be able to recognize and boot that out of touch, or into touch, boot that up to the midfield stripe, just like he had repeatedly done against New York. And it's crazy to me. It's crazy that they played it so safe against the Red Bulls. And then within the first 30 seconds of this game against Portland, who has, by the way, scored multiple goals off their own pressure in this postseason, that they take such an insane risk. And they basically lost the cup.
It was baffling. I mean, they were so pragmatic. And we spent so much time praising Greg Berhalter for that in the Red Bull series. And then it's just it feels like it's out the window. I mean, you'd think, when's the time for the intensity and when's the time for the attention to detail to be turned on? The first 30 seconds of a cup final at home.
It's almost like they knew the Red Bulls were going to press them high and they were smart about it. And then they were like, we're done with the Red Bulls. Let's move on to the next concept. And that's not what Portland does. And then they did it. But I think you cannot blame the loss altogether on Steve Clark.
Absolutely
because
not.
What he saved three big chances.
Yeah.
I mean, the save against Borchers, the save in the first half against Adi when he's in on goal was huge as well, because that the game's over at 3-1 if it's going into halftime at 3-1. So I get the mistakes on him, but there's no way you can blame the loss based on the performance on him.
Yeah, look, the second goal, I think there's some talk of blame on that one too, and it's going in a couple different directions. A lot of it's being directed at least, you know, at the assistant referee, because it looked like the ball was out of bounds. I mean, I say looked
like it was.
As I say, it looked like as a qualifier, but the ball was out of bounds. And you can see it on the replay, and the assistant referee missed it. Jaron Rufo may have been screened on the play. Either way, the play should have been stopped, but it wasn't. And Greg Berhalter said in his post-game press conference, look, this is professional sports. You got to keep playing. You play until the whistle. I mean, I remember hearing that as a five-year-old in YMCA ball. You know, that's like one of the first basic concepts that you learn, just because that's the basic tenet of the game. Tony Chani did not follow it. The ball goes out of bounds, just for some background here. Alvis Powell passing it to Diego Chará. It goes out of bounds. Chará pass. No. Chará to Powell. Either way, it doesn't matter. He touches it in. Chani picks the ball up and kind of nonchalantly starts to take it to the sideline as if it might be a throw. No whistle. No flag. Nagby takes it. Takes off the other way. Finds Lucas Milano. One-touch cross later, and Rodney Wallace is beating a sleeping Harrison Offal at the back post for a goal that put a real dagger in the Nordic and in Columbus Crew SC fans. Doyle, I thought it was, I don't know if this was master trolling or what it was, but you immediately tweeted out, congratulations to your 2015 MLS Cup champions, the Portland Timbers. And, you know, beer starts raining down from the Nordic, which I will come right out and say the same thing I said during the game. Absolutely reprehensible behavior. That's not something that you condone. That you can hurt somebody really bad doing that. That's completely... you know, I don't want to say it's the Nordic, it's those fans that threw it, but that's terrible behavior. Some I can understand it, but Tony Chani, you got to play this thing, right? I mean, and this is not the first time we've seen this, Doyle.
Yeah, we saw this almost exact same type of thing happen 3 years ago, Tony Chani, against FC Dallas. He thought Fabian Castillo was over the end line, and he stopped playing and raised his hand and started waving to the referee or to the AR, and Castillo just dribbled straight in on goal and scored. This is not the first time Tony Chani has made a mistake that you yell at 8-year-olds for. Like, this is one of the things that, like Andrew said, this is one of the first things you're taught, and Chani has now made this mistake twice. And this one, I tweeted that it was kind of trolling, but I was 100% serious. As soon as Portland scored that second goal, I was like, there's absolutely no way they're losing this. They are the MLS Cup champions. And it's just in the most bizarre way possible, because it was a blown call. Oh, and by the way, that previous instance where Johnny stopped playing when the ball went over the end line, it was the same AR. It was, I want to say his name is Corey Parker. I want to make sure I get that right.
Otherwise, Corey Parker's getting a ton of angry messages.
we'll confirm that. We'll make sure we come back with that. The sad thing, guys, is that Tony Chani in these playoffs in this season had made himself into one of the best young, not even young, just one of the best number eights in
this
league.
He was dominant against the Red Bulls.
Yeah, he was a bully, man. He was out there throwing people around, and he was out there completing the right passes, moving the ball quickly. The Crew didn't do nearly enough of that in this game. They did not move the ball with the same urgency, the same pace that they did during the regular season. Their spacing wasn't the same. They didn't get the ball wide for those one-on-one matchups that really killed teams throughout 2015. Ethan Finley, I didn't even notice he was on the field until about the 40th minute, and I think he was like recovering defensively, and I was like, oh yeah, that's
he did this against New York, because throughout the season the substitution was Cedric for Miram around the 70th minute every game, and first leg against the Red Bulls it was Finley for Cedric, and you could see Berhalter recognizing that Finley's not giving me the performances I needed. It's an odd time to disappear like that. I think a lot of it was the focus from other teams. Just, you know, it was easy in the regular season. Fullbacks wander. They go up the field. I have space to hit them. And everyone said, we're not going to let Finley beat us. And he didn't really have any ideas outside of what, I'm going to cut in. I'm going to try and take this guy on one-on-one.
North-south.
I mean, yesterday he tried to take them the defender one-on-one every play and never got to the end line and put across it. And you have Kai Kamara, potentially the most dominant aerial threat in MLS history. That's how good he's been this year. And you, at no point in this game, maybe once in around the 70th minute off a long ball, did he have a chance to go up and attack in the box. And that is unacceptable. Cedric came in and was a game changer, but Finley, he has to bring more to the game. Yep. Miram wasn't getting the ball on the outside, so he came in field, started to
always
pick up the ball.
Always wants to come in field anyway. I mean, that's kind of the MO for him. One shot on goal for the Crew. That's is that the fewest in MLS Cup history?
Waylon Francis tied for lead with two shots on the team.
Yeah, tough. The one shot is, of course, Kai Kamara's goal. A nice goal for him, kind of a garbage goal. Adam Quarce, he's going to look at that one and say, thank God we didn't lose on that play, because he absolutely whiffs on a high ball in the box. Kai collects, turns. Megs, I believe it was Powell, but either way, gets the goal and kind of like sets the game up for something exciting down the line. Matt, this is a team that was one of the best attacking teams in MLS all year. Why was it? It's not just Ethan Finley. I mean, that's for sure. It was collective here. Higuain wasn't very good. On and on.
I actually kind of disagree with Gasman about Finley versus the Red Bulls. I thought his touch was off in that series, but he served a purpose, right? Because the Crew, they were in control of the game state. They were the ones who had the lead literally from 8 seconds in that entire series. So when you have that, you know you need speed to get in behind. And that really hurt the Red Bulls in terms of how they could push up and what they would leave behind him. When the game state is what it was in this game, when you're chasing the game 2-0 and you're going against a team that's going to stay deep and compact, Finlay, it turned out in this one to be next to useless. As Gasman said, he needed to hit a couple early crosses in there. He needed to try to get the ball into Kamara's head. Just make them a little bit uncomfortable. He never did that. Miram, I thought, was active and tried to create stuff, but he lacks that little bit of burst to get away from his defenders in the final third.
I think part of that, Doyle, also was he was trying to take on three guys. When he was trying to, I thought he would beat his first man, but then there was two more defenders right there because Higuain wasn't taking away space. No one was really filling in his area. And when he came in field, I just thought there was too many bodies.
Like, and the
him.
Other thing is Diego Chará. I think you look at Miriam when you're talking about burst, like he's not a fast guy.
He's got
in
speed,
the first
though.
Place, but he's not elite fast.
Okay.
Right.
He also had a groin injury. Yeah. And you know, at this point of the year, you know, I think you know, I've heard a couple people say it, and I'm blanking on who the quote is from, but it's basically MLS is – I think it's Kerry Talley. MLS is not about who's best at 100%. It's about who's best at 75-80%, and that's where you are at the end of a season like this. And it just – it felt like the Timbers were a little bit fresher, a little bit more poised, and it helps to have those two goals, as Matt said. That's game state.
I think also not just fresher, and it's clear. The first 8 minutes, Columbus played like it was a regular season game, and Portland played like it was a final. They brought the intensity and focus that I just think Columbus, they didn't realize it was going to be necessary, which was what's so odd. that you would come into a moment like this, the buzz around the game, the buzz around the city, and not realize that everyone was going to come and play at a higher level.
Now, we're talking about Ethan Finley, and look, I don't think we – I think I'd be clear. We're not piling on Ethan Finley the same as we're not piling on Steve Clark. It's a collective loss for Columbus Crew SC. But Ethan Finley did say in the lead-up to this match that he liked his matchup against Jorge Filivagna. Well, Sueño did his thing, man. He had a great game. Diego Chará had a great game. There are guys on this Timbers team that don't get the pub of a Darlington Nagbe who's been the darling of the media for a while. I wanted to avoid saying that, but I still did. Diego Valeri, of course, with his great narrative, injury, coming back, getting that goal. Fernando Adi's emergence as a dominant number nine. But this team has guys, you know, Borchers, Ridgewell. This team has guys that do the dirty work and do it at an elite level. And I thought Diego Chará and Jorge Villafania were maybe the players of the match for the Portland Timbers.
Moving Chará to that deep central pure number six role is what changed the game for the Portland Timbers, is because he still can cover ground at that position faster than maybe anyone else, but he's got the brain to play it as well. So we saw repeatedly he and Nagbe, I think, pushing Columbus's attacks to one side or the other, funneling them straight into the help of the fullbacks, and Villafania has been up for it all year. Well, I'll say from maybe mid-June onwards. He's been defensively very, very good from that time onwards. And Alvis Powell, I got to give credit to him as well. They did pick on him a couple of times, but for the most part, he didn't take any insane risks pushing forward. He didn't leave space in behind. And, of course, the few mistakes he did make, he was able to run down. There was one where Miram got behind him and he just reeled Miram in like that. And I think that actually ends up being a mistake by Greg Berhalter. I think he needed to flip Finlay and Miram, let Miram go against a slightly slower player in Villafania, and let Finlay attack on the side where space always seems to open up. Because if they had done that, they would have been able to drag Nat Borchers out of the central defense. If you drag Nat Borchers into space, then you could deal with him. But if Nat Borchers is inside the 18, if he's in that central channel, you're just not going to find many opportunities because he's such a smart reader of the game and he's such a great organizer. And that was what struck me more than anything else defensively. Once they had that 2-0, they were never disorganized for a single second. I mean, that is the 100%, that's the Nat Borchers effect.
And Columbus's reaction to it, rather than being, let's move the ball quicker, let's move off the ball, there was moments in the second half where someone had the ball on the top of the box and no one was moving off the ball. And it was, I think it's frustrating for Columbus fans because they weren't even playing the way they've played in the regular, like they weren't even doing the things that they do well. None of the crosses put in from anyone, Higuain on dead balls, Miram and Finley from open play, were of quality service. You had it on the ground, which makes no sense, or it was over Kai's head, which is tough to do. He's the aerial threat. And then I thought Greg Berhalter, he had one ace up his sleeve. He brought Cedric in around the 55th, 60th minute, and he was a game changer. I mean, this guy's a starter next year, and I think he's going to be a star in MLS, and something's going to have to move around in this team to get him in that lineup consistently. And he came in, and they put him out on the right against Villafania, and he was taking advantage, and then they swapped him over to the left, and like Doyle said, he was finding space around Powell, and he was creating opportunities. He was taking guys on. He's got the individual speed, but he's got the touch as well to get by guys. He was a game changer, and it's tough to take out a guy who's been your star all season early in a cup final, but it probably could have been made at halftime and said, we're not getting what we need from you and Finley, and we need Cedric on the field. And he created opportunities, and just no one could really – they couldn't get one away. And like he said, Borchers blocking shots.
Yeah, and it's not just Borchers. It's Liam Ridgewell as well. Right. And Doyle, I thought it was very interesting in your column, which, as always, we say it all the time, is a must-read for folks. Go check that out. The Valeri play.
I was going to say.
The Valeri play. Okay, I'll start saying it more. The Valeri play, Ridgewell's in the back, and you see him waving everybody forward, and you see him talking. And that's those two guys back there. That's really a credit to the organization that Caleb Porter and the staff and those two guys and everybody on the team has been able to put into this side this year. You know, there was a reputation that Caleb had a couple years back, 2013, when they were so good and they almost won the Supporter Shield and they had that run of the playoffs, but it was just kind of willy-nilly at times and the defense was a question mark. Well, that's not been the case this year, and I think in a lot of ways that's what won this game because they really had to shut it down for 80 minutes. And Matt, your game states, always talking about that, 100% was the factor in this one. Portland said, okay, we can be organized now. We've got our goals. Come and beat us. Come create chances. You can't do it. They didn't do it. Portland Timbers, MLS Cup champions 2015, the 10th MLS team to win this, the third expansion team to win this. Chicago Fire and RSL would be the others. Just 5 years into their MLS existence, the Portland Timbers are champion. We are going to go to break right now. When we come back, we're going to take a little bit more of a big picture approach. Look at MLS Cup. What does it mean for Cascadia? What does it mean for the Timbers? What does it mean for Columbus Crew SC? Stick with us here on Extra Time Radio.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt, the Armchair Analyst, Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. We're here in a hotel room in Columbus, Ohio, in the wake of MLS Cup 2015. The Portland
we are at
Timbers.
The heart of MLS right now.
Yes, we are. The Portland Timbers champions, the 10th champion in MLS history, the 10th team, I should say, to win, the 20th overall champion in MLS history. A little bit of a clarification from our breakdown there. It was Corey Parker who was the AR on that play. He was also the assistant referee of the year in MLS this year. So he had a great year. He had a tough moment. I'm sure it's something that I'm sure he's beating himself up about that one right
Listen,
now.
Listen, and that mistake was huge. I thought Jair
it
Marufo
didn't cause the goal though.
No, and I thought Jair Marufo had a tough day as well. He was, I think, scared to give out yellow cards early, and it kind of got out of control for a little bit. It wasn't a messy physical game. That wasn't the reason that any team won or lost. It wasn't the overarching, but the atmosphere, I think, and the frustration for Columbus came from that. Mm-hmm. And then every little decision became a whole bigger thing. I mean, Chani was physically in his face multiple times. There was a ball that went out of bounds that they called later on the opposite side of where the Chani play happened. And everyone kept playing, and then they stopped playing, said it was out, and Chani runs over to him and points to the other side of the field and goes, that's exactly what happened.
Well, you know what? I got I love Tony Chani as a player, but I think he has some maturing to do on the field. I certainly think that you saw it in the Red Bull series.
We talked to Kai about it when he was in the studio, and he said, I'm his big brother, mm-hmm. but –
He's got some maturing to do. He's a great player, but there's a lot for him to improve on. We'll see what happens next year with him. We'll see what happens with both these teams next year. We'll talk about that in just a second. Let's talk a little bit about what this means for Portland, because this is a club with an incredible fan base. We know all about the Timbers Army. The amount of press they get is just, it's frankly unbelievable at times. They had a huge contingent there at Maffrey Stadium. There was, I think reports were between 2,000 and 3,000 people. They had the entire section underneath the scoreboard almost filled up, about 1,000 people in there making noise all game long. People scattered around. It was actually really interesting during the national anthem.
Yeah,
you know, they do the thing with the scarves. So you had like an easy way to pick out exactly, you know, you're looking for the green, of course, but you had an easy way to pick out exactly where Timbers fans were, and they really enjoyed this one after the game. We were thinking about going to the Timbers party, we ended up hanging out with the staffers. You go through 10 months of work, you want to celebrate with your friends in that way, but I'm sure that they painted the town green, let's say, last night. Timbers fans, the feeling you had in the stadium, Dave, how did they react to this one?
There was that initial bit of disbelief, like, did that just happen? I mean, we said it. In October, they were out of the playoffs, and now they're champions. And then just pure joy. They were jumping back and forth on the stands, and every time a player or a coach would come over, there were some cool moments. I saw the president of TA bring over Will Johnson, and they gave him an applause. And then Caleb came over, like, last before they went in the locker room, and they went nuts. They were jumping back and forth, and one fan actually fell out of the section onto the tarp in front of them.
Oh, my God.
And they pulled him back up, and he just started jumping
again.
Oh, man. And I could not believe it. There was just pure happiness, and it's a city they said we were going to – I mean, one guy got choked up talking to me in the bar after the game, and he said, I called my family, and my kids were screaming, Timbers are MLS Cup champions, and he was like, got choked up, and he's like, apologize, and I was like, no, man, I'm choked up now.
Yeah.
Like, it was really, really cool to see how much it meant to them. And, you know, there's always the jokes of, like, you know, best fan base and blah, 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 Soccer City. But it was an unbelievable environment, and a lot of that was because of them.
Congratulations to Timbers fans. Congratulations to Merritt Paulson, the Portland Timbers, players, coaches, staffers. It's a long, hard slog, and these are the type of moments that can really change a franchise, certainly. I have a little bit of a question for you guys, though, and it comes from a quote from Caleb Porter in the press conference. He was, you know, talking about the honor of winning this and all the hard work they did, and he said, "We're raising the trophy, and we're the best team in MLS this year." And I understand that in the post game, you're emotional and you're saying a lot of things, but I guess maybe it strikes me as funny. Maybe this is just getting down too far into the weeds. I don't think there's really a good way in MLS to say you're the best team. I don't think the Portland Timbers can say we are the best team in MLS this year. They can say we are the best team in the playoffs. We were the hottest team at the right time. But for that, to say that, I'm not saying that's disingenuous. I'm not saying that that's the wrong thing to say. Congratulations, the Timbers. I know you're going to send me a lot of hate mail right now for this, but I don't know that any team in MLS has a good case to come out and say we're the best team in the league. It's just, I don't know that it works that way.
I get why you say that, and if you win MLS Cup, it's your right to say that. But I'm with you, Weebs. I don't think there's any rock solid way to say, yeah, we were the best team in MLS this year, because they weren't for the vast majority of the year. They weren't. I tend to lean towards the supporter shield since 96. I've always been a big believer that the team that's best during the regular season is the best team. I understand the qualms that people have with that, and I've said it a million times, the one way to make certain that you get people to really buy in that you guys are the best team is to win both. If the Red Bulls had won both, there would be no discussion. If the Timbers had won both, there would be no discussion. They would be the best team. As it is, I don't care about the semantics. They're MLS Cup champions. That is the trophy that everybody wants every year, and that's the one that the Timbers have, so I think they should be happy with that.
I just think you can't look at it that they're a sixth seed, though, that made a run, and it's not like they're the Red Bulls in 08 who won the Western Conference Championship as the last team in, and it doesn't make sense. They beat Dallas, they beat Vancouver, and they beat Columbus.
Sporting KC, don't forget
right,
about that.
But I'm saying on the road.
Right.
So this team, over the last two months, has been the best team in MLS. They are playing as dominant as anyone has this season right now. And that's huge, because it's not like, you know, there's a whole debate last year the Golden State Warriors won the championship. Yep. They didn't face the best. At their best, I think Portland did. Portland took every punch. They won games in different ways. And so I think right now there's no question that the Portland Timbers are the best team in MLS. They have the best squad playing at the best level at this current moment. And so that's why I think you can say it, because they performed. They were third in a tough Western Conference as well. And I don't take away from what the Red Bulls did, because they were the best team in the regular season. I don't think there's as big a difference between the East and the West as some people say. But they were third place in a tough conference, and then they went and did what they did in the playoffs. So I'm okay with them saying it.
Yeah, look, timing is everything, and congratulations to the Timbers. I don't want anybody out there to think that I'm trying to take away from their accomplishment, because I'm not. They had an incredible three months.
Okay.
Maybe it just kind of struck me as an interesting way to say
right.
it. And I, as Matt said, they have the right to say it. I don't have a problem with them saying it. I just thought it was interesting, and in the context of MLS, something that I at least wanted to see what other people thought, and also, you know, inspire some hate mail. Inspire some hate mail. No, I'm just kidding. And Matt, prepare for the emails that say, yeah, Red Bulls fan says the Red Bulls are the best team in the regular season. So we should have some good stuff coming. Good stuff. Nat Borchers, he knows how to work the media. We know that very well. He trimmed his beard a little bit last night. He says he wants to keep some of it, but they did bring the scissors to the red beard. But I think he kind of semi-trolled Sounders and Vancouver fans, and I think Portland Timbers fans have to be just hyped, just so hyped, because they get that MLS Cup first, and this is forever bragging rights. You know what I mean? Like, anytime anything happens, it's like, oh, wait. Were we the first? Oh, we were the first Cascadia team to win this thing. Here's what Borchers had to say. It's great, and I think Vancouver and Seattle are happy for us too, with as much of the rivalry as we have with them, because it throws a spotlight on what great part of the country this is to play soccer. The weather, the fans, the rivalries, it's special. Do we think that that Vancouver and Seattle fans are actually happy for Portland right now? Cascadia, you know, togetherness, so to speak?
I think 0%. 0% happy. I definitely think he was trolling his good friends up by five a little bit. And look, I think part of it was probably directed at Garth Lagerwey. Garth Lagerwey is the guy who traded Nat Borchers from RSL to Portland. It's like the last thing he did before he left to take over in Seattle. So I think that was, I'm not going to say a shot across the bow, but certainly a reminder of the way things are. And like you said, these are forever bragging rights. The Portland Timbers are the first Cascadia team to win MLS Cup. And I think that Seattle and Vancouver fans are periodically going to be reminded of that.
I don't normally talk about this because it doesn't matter to me, but the TIFO, the first time they play Seattle, is going to be something about how we came in later and we won it first. You absolutely know that that's all they're going to talk about. And they deserve it. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be sweet. Speaking of TIFO, two nice displays in this match as well. You can check those out. The images, that is, at MLSsoccer.com. A big one for the Nordek and TIFO sweat. I was there on Friday night to see them building it. It was a very cool process. And then, of course, the Timbers bringing their massive drum, bringing all their gear, bringing a sweet TIFO display. They really went in on the eastbound and down theme this year, which I
think once something's working, you got to stick with it, right? Yeah. A little bit of good luck. Although, once Adi hit that post, I'm sure they didn't think they had any luck going for them, but it ended up working out.
Yeah, big 2-1 win for the Portland Timbers. As we said, MLS Cup champions, and they did it with a little bit of a different philosophy. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people this weekend about kind of the whole homegrown thing and play your kids and all this stuff, and you know, some people had mixed feelings about it. Well, the Portland Timbers, they've pretty much said that's not our style. We're gonna go find folks, draft picks, homegrowns, not our deal. It's kind of an indication that there are multiple ways to win in MLS. We knew that, but I think this whole USL youth development homegrown model had really kind of become the darling of development recently.
It had, and it still will be going forward. But this is a team that was constructed without any emphasis on the homegrown program and with minimal emphasis on the draft. I mean, Nagby is the only draft pick they've had who's made any kind of splash. I mean, I guess you could say George Fochiv, who had a pretty decent year as like the fourth defensive midfielder in the rotation. But no, I mean, this is a team that's built with as much foreign influence as possible. They brought in a DP center back in Liam Ridgewell, which is something that not a lot of people have done. Their midfield, all three guys in their central midfield are internationals. Diego Chara has a couple of caps for Colombia, and Diego Valeri has three caps for Argentina, and obviously Darlington Nagby, now part of the U.S. setup. And guys like Chara and Valeri, who aren't quite good enough to play for some of the great national teams in the world, it was shrewd of Portland to target those guys 3-4 years ago when they got them and to build around that. So they had a different philosophy. They have internationals all over. Rodney Wallace, borderline international for Costa Rica. Alvis Powell, international for Jamaica. Fernando Adi, Nigerian U23 international. They have gone out and found pieces in places where other MLS teams haven't. Whether it's sustainable, that remains to be seen. But for certainly this 2-month span, there's no question that it worked.
And I think one of the keys is their guys in their prime. They didn't go out and get big-name aging stars from Europe, and they didn't go out. They struck out with the young DP in Valencia that they went after earlier. None of these guys are 21, and none of these guys are 34. All of them were in their prime when they came in, and they're guys that they looked around the world, like you said, in maybe under a couple rocks, not going straight into La Liga or going straight into the Premier League. And they found these guys who were in their prime and ready to carry a team and ready to carry a team through a full season. And it's also your spine. It's up the middle. I mean, Ridgewell, you're talking about Chara, you're talking about Valeri, you're talking about Adi. Those are all guys that you came in between 26 and 31 in their prime, ready to play, workhorses. And I think that that's a key. It's something I hope we start seeing, bringing guys in that may not be as big or known, but are guys that are ready to perform for you. And maybe they're not going to sell that ticket, but they're going to get you performances.
But the collective success maybe will.
And Portland, that's the thing. Portland's fan base deserves some credit for that because
right.
because of Portland's fan base,
yeah.
this team does not have to worry about bringing in a guy like Gio Dos Santos who doesn't fit. Who doesn't fit on the field but sells a bunch of tickets. Portland's going to sell those tickets anyway. They're going to sell those jerseys anyway. The fan base definitely had an influence in how this team was built, and the way the team was built was good enough to win a title.
And one other thing is they were deeper. They were a deeper yep. team. I mean, they bring Espria, they bring Urruti. They had Will Johnson on the bench that they didn't have to use. Any team in MLS would kill to have those options. Columbus yesterday would have killed to have some of those options, and that's one of the other things that they've had is they've been able to build up a consistent base of a bench that could start at times. In other teams,
I thought that was the difference in the Eastern Conference Championship. I thought the Columbus Crew were were deeper. And to go back to your prime comments, I'd be interested to hear what we had to say when Ridjo was signed because
right.
you remember how that signing was panned by a lot of people, and he's making a lot of money, and it seemed like an investment that might not pay off. Well, I think Merritt Paulson and Gavin Wilkinson and Caleb Porter are laughing to the bank on that one. Speaking of young DPs, it's going to be interesting to see what Lucas Milano does. But my point on him and on Adi and on some of these other guys, the Timbers have not been afraid to pay for that talent either. To bring guys in their prime, they've not been afraid to shell out a few million bucks at times to make sure that they have the guys that they want on the field. So a nice season for them. Built this team up really, really well. A heartbreaker for the Crew, and we'll talk about them real quick before we get to the mailbag and some general news, expansion news in MLS, Carlos Vela, a lot of different things going on. Kai Kamara sitting on the field after the game, Columbus Crew SC representative on the field.
Over 20 minutes.
Yeah, sitting there watching the celebrations, and he's told me before, look, and he's told us before, I want to see that. I want to feel that feeling. Feel what it looks like and try to channel that for my next opportunity. The Nordic chanting his name, it was one of those, it really was a special moment, and you know, it's a tough one for the Crew. They've still got a ton of potential, but it may not be the same team next year. Where do they go?
I think the one thing is you're probably not going to start the season with Finley and Merrim. I just think Cedric's going to be a starter, and they have to improve a little bit. Center back got better with Saro, but either it's another center midfield option or a different attacking option. They didn't have anything off the bench. They brought Mohamed Saidin, who's a useful player and filled in well at times for World Trap, but isn't going to change a game in a final. And so I think one of those two. Though the one possibility you could have, and we haven't talked about this because we were talking before, but I think you could bring Merrim in field and play him as a number 10 if you think Higuain's best days are behind him, which from watching him intently this year because I was the opt analyst on Columbus, he always has the right idea, but there are games where he shows up and his touch just isn't there and the pass isn't played. He sees it.
Yesterday was one of them.
Exactly. He sees it.
He gets into better spots than anybody else in the league, but so often his ability to turn that position into something special just totally deserts him, and that's a big story with him, and he's going to be 32 next season.
And he's not on that Valeri Diaz level.
Production.
Right, so can you put him in the team and say, well, he's not going to do as much defensively, blah, 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 but he's got that spark. If he doesn't, and Justin Merrim plays that role for Iraq, he's their number 10, and I think he has that ability to do it. You see him come in field, he likes to pull the strings. I would be intrigued to give him those keys and give him that opportunity, but I don't think that they're going to be able to do it.
Well, incredible final, drama, controversy. It was thrilling. The environment was incredible. MLS Cup 2015, congratulations to the Portland Timbers. Condolences to Columbus Crew SC and their fans. It was tough to see that last night, tough to be in the
building.
There
were some cool moments after the game of Timbers fans thanking Columbus fans for the atmosphere
yeah.
and for the environment
and
that
the hospitality
was that was yeah. really cool to see.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Let us know what you think. I'm sure folks out there have a lot of thoughts on this one, from the referees to the play to all the afters, everything going on here in Columbus. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com, we'll dive into all your thoughts on Thursday, of course, as well as touching on all the postseason moves here in Major League Soccer, because that stuff's heating up awful quick. The hot stove, it's going to burn you if you don't watch out. Let's go to the mailbag. We have a lot of big topics to discuss. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com. or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst, Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. Leave it up, Dave. I am vibing. This is
a little samba.
Yeah, I'm getting my groove on in this hotel room. Matt is out in San Francisco in a Snuggie or something.
Yeah, just to give you guys the setting, Matt Doyle is bringing cutting-edge analysis right now, sitting in a room by himself in a Snuggie, and I cannot take him seriously.
Yeah. Is it a
Snuggie? Staying on brand, gentlemen. This is me.
Is that a Snuggie, Doyle, or is that some other like cutting edge piece of warming blanket technology?
This is a Snuggie. This is the actual authentic thing.
Is it the uniform of San Francisco?
It is not. It rarely gets chilly enough here in Berkeley to wear it, but when it does, I really relish it. It's very comfortable.
Yeah, always quick with the weather joke. We were quite cold yesterday. My feet felt like they were going to freeze, but I'm all warmed up now. Let's talk a little bit about some news in MLS before we get out of here. The MLS Board of Governors, they always meet at events like this, and they did that this time, and when they do, they make a number of decisions. The one that got the most publicity around MLS Cup 2015 is an expansion of expansion. Plans. So we heard for a long time that MLS was going for 24 teams by 2020. Atlanta, LA, and Minnesota were going to join, and Miami's kind of in flux, of course, although there is some news about a stadium in the Overton neighborhood. But now the new news is that there is a quote-unquote no shortage of demand for MLS expansion teams, and MLS believes the opportunity exists to grow beyond their current plans. That's according to MLS Commissioner Don Garber. So they're evaluating the possibility of growing the league to 28 teams, not 24, and the timeline is kind of out there in the ether. We're not sure yet. I'm not sure they're not public with that either. That means Sacramento to me. That's a call to Sacramento saying, "Hey guys, no, you're good. We got you. If you've seen their stadium plans, they're gorgeous. I mean, I think Sacramento seems like a shoe-in at this point. Yes? No?
Hey, here's something.
Yeah, I think Sacramento's in. I think San Antonio's probably in as well, given that they were just purchased by the Spurs and with the express intent of someday getting into MLS. I think St. Louis, I think they will find an ownership group. So I think those are the three big ones.
Someone that works for Sacramento Republic was on a bus next to me yesterday and said that they had the most registered players of any city, soccer players of any city in the U.S. I don't know if there's any truth to that, and I just said it on this show, but that's what they said.
According to someone on a bus, right, who may or may not, was the radiator clanking when he was talking, or was
she.
It? She, okay.
And she worked for Sacramento Republic, so
she worked for Sacramento Republic.
It's not like she has a dog in the race. She's just being honest and giving out stats.
Yes, unbiased bus information. On that one. So some exciting times with expansion MLS. Any thoughts? You live in one of those cities? You have an opinion on that? I'm sure you do.
Tell us cities that you think. I mean, if anyone's in a city that has that vibe, that, I mean, seems like it could have a chance.
I really want to hear from people in North Carolina, in both Raleigh and Charlotte, because I think one of those two markets is going to be a good bet, because there needs to be more than one Southern team.
Yeah.
Right now, it's only going to be Atlanta. So I think.
Well,
and I
Orlando.
Orlando, they have Miami, potentially.
I don't consider those to be the South, though. Right.
That's a good point. Let us know if you're in North Carolina. I think St. Louis continues to be an interesting one. I'd like to hear what people there think of that viability. I think St. Louis's history as a soccer town is near unparalleled in the U.S. I wonder, you know, it's the ownership thing, it's the market size thing, but man, KC, St. Louis, if those teams came in, that rivalry would be absolutely bonkers. It would be incredible. Then you're talking about Chicago, all these other places, yada yada. Some other news that came out of this meeting as well, of course, the owner is very supportive of Miami Beckham United's plans. We talked about that, a new area for that stadium development that they're looking at. It looks like it could come off. Some other things here: decision day next year, all matches on the final weekend will be played in the same day and the same time slot, so there's not going to be the 5 and 7 like there was. It's all at one time. It's going to be insane. Please, please, God, a great wraparound show would be, or you know, whatever show, whatever you want to call it, would be absolutely incredible. Let's see, what else we got going here? MLS will take a 2-week break during the 2016 for Copa America Centenario.
It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be exciting. I mean, it looks like the tournament's going to come off. If you haven't been paying attention to the news, there have been more arrests, including a number from CONCACAF and from CONMEBOL. So there's a lot of sketchiness continuing with FIFA, and I saw a headline the other day that Sepp Blatter's being investigated for $100 million bribe of some sort. So a lot to pay attention to there. I mean, that break is pretty necessary, I would think, guys, right?
It seems like it. You don't know what's going to happen with all these FIFA arrests and indictments. I mean, I'm still not 100% convinced that the tournament's going to happen. But if it does happen, yeah, I think there has to be a break.
Now, some other news as well. It doesn't stop there. All this is at MLSsoccer.com as well. More targeted allocation money appears to be on the horizon. Owners discussed it, according to the league, but they will have more details and more news on that in the near future. So I think the assumption, based on a lot of things going around, is that there will be more of that, some more money to spend on designated players.
And can I just interject right here? Every team I have talked to is planning their budget for next year as if this new allocation money does in fact exist. So, well, I think that'll get done.
Next year is coming. That's where we'll turn our thoughts to on Thursday. Stick with us for that one. In the meantime, congratulations once again to the Portland Timbers and their fans. A massive win in MLS Cup 20. For myself, for Dave Goss, for old Snuggy here, we're going to call it a day. We'll see you on Thursday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.